You know ID in the town all day. ID in the SEA. You know ID in the town all day. ID in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode 473 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carzino.
And we're coming to you from different locations. I'm in Las Vegas, Nevada.
Wow,
home of
heard
the
of
NBA
it.
Summer League.
And I'm coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks.
I don't know. Are there any Huskies who play for the Raiders currently? Should I know that? I don't think there's any obvious ones anymore.
I am sure that there are.
Probably.
Marcel Reese.
That is literally the first name that came to mind for me. I bet he's employed by the Raiders in some capacity. I don't know if I'm going to look that up, but
he's employed by somebody.
They love once a Raider, always a Raider.
Are you
searching
like,
for it?
At least last year, yeah.
Like Justin Fargus is an important member of the Raiders organization, and then his wife Nikki Fargus is the president and
he's
GM.
He's an executive with the Raiders.
Okay, there we go. Marcel Reese, good for you. Good for all of us.
Oh, all he right. resigned in 2023. Never mind.
He was
Raiders' senior vice president, chief of staff. He resigned in 2023.
I'm sure it was on to bigger and better. Anyways, we're not here to talk about Marcel Reese. This is your life. We have a lot to get to this week, but let's start with a reminder to everyone who has not yet to listen to last week's Talking Taco Time, which was delightful because it did not feature Tristan.
Did you talk about it not featuring me?
Yeah, we didn't mention that you weren't on there. I explained that one of your 10 to 15 children had a baseball tournament as
no
every
Huskies
other time
on the
during
roster.
The is every other time between May and July.
Three players from SMU, no Huskies.
Okay, SMU, who knew? But let's get started with a toast to the dumper.
Hello.
Congratulations to home run derby champ Cal Raleigh, who joins three-time winner Ken Griffey Jr., who won in 1994, 1998, and 1999, but spiritually won in 1993, although Julio Rodriguez also was a spiritual winner.
He didn't
winner.
Win in 93?
No, he did not. We'll talk about it in a second. As the second Mariners player to win the home run derby.
Just wait for me to incorrectly identify what year he won the home run derby in my Mariners hot takes.
Oh, good.
I'm not changing
it. Is it in there? Love it.
Oh, yeah.
So this is on the hot take. Should we not talk about it now? Should we talk about
it? No. We could talk about it. I mean, I feel like we should talk about the home run derby in general in Mariners section, maybe.
I don't know. This
Let's
felt
just do the
like semi-emergency pod, but okay. All right.
We could do it semi-emergency pod if you want.
I mean,
I just want to get to the Mariners. I don't even care about any. I can't believe we have to talk about soccer and stuff.
Well, we have to talk about cookies. They're what's ahead in the rundown.
Hello.
And NBA Seattle update. So maybe we should just move the M's hot takes to the beginning. Should we do that?
Wow, we're starting with Mariners hot takes?
Let's do it.
This is like Cal leading off, which I have been asking for.
Let's get to it. Your favorite segment.
Don't burn yourself. We got Mariners hot takes coming at you.
As usual, you're wrong. What better way do we have to celebrate someone who has done unbelievable things for a city than a statue? To remember the moments, the miracles, the memories, and the giant booties. What a difference a week can make in Major League Baseball. And for the Seattle Mariners, what a week it was. Coming off a devastating sweep at the hands of the Yankees, they rolled into the home of Mort Krim and the best team in baseball, Detroit City, and they were not getting back on their feet this time because the Mariners and Cal Raleigh handed them the most satisfying three games of the year for the Mariners. A series where everyone got in on the action hitting-wise, a top-to-bottom masterpiece of ninth-inning proportions, which they rode high into the All-Star break and the home run derby. And real legends need big moments. Consistent, sustained slap singles just isn't enough. No, you have to have moments that everyone in the city can feel deep in their soul. Saints famously need two miracles to be canonized. And if the second most home runs heading into the All-Star break and most by a catcher wasn't already enough, Cal already had his beatification miracle when he sent the Mariners back to the playoffs after 20 years. And on Tuesday night, he just reached sainthood when he became the second Mariner in history to win the home run derby, with a dominating bracket performance, with his dad throwing to him and his brother catching. This was the greatest Mariners moment on a stage like that since Griffey first did it in the season of record. 1994, as we all know. And now, after these miracles, it is confirmed that Cal is the third most important Mariners hitter of all time. The conversation is over, and there are no competitors for the spot. He's done it on the biggest stage, consistently now for years, at the most important defensive position, looking plump from both sides of the plate. This isn't a situation like the Midnight Boys overthinking and saying something horseshit like, Andor is now more classic than Yoda. No. We all know the echelon of Mariners hitting weapons, and the other two both have statues outside of T-Mobile Park. That is why, not after, no, right now, during the 2025 season, they should be unveiling the juiciest statue in Mariners history right there on Edgar Martinez Drive, right next to Ken Griffey Jr. with that sweet left-handed stroke that sent home Junior Caminero right in a loading zone so people can literally pull over because that ass is too fat.
Well, that's well done.
Shots to Trina.
I mean, if we go to, let's talk about the Griffey home run derbies, because the funny thing is I don't remember any of the three home run derbies he won.
And I probably have vague memories of them. 93 is the one.
Exactly. I mean, it's the home run derby of record. He spiritually won it by hitting the B&O warehouse. He and Juan Gonzalez tied with 7 home runs, and Juan Gonzalez won the tiebreaker that year. A year, I believe, he also led the league in home runs ahead of Griffey.
By 1, 46. Isn't it kind of crazy, though? Like, that was an obscene amount of homers that year, 45. And Cal is very close to that right now.
That is true. Like, his stats are just truly mind-boggling. There was something they flashed on ESPN the other day when I was walking through the casino that, like, no player in MLB history has had the combination of, like, it's home runs and grand slams and something else that he had.
Good stuff. So,
I mean, the point is not the specific stat. The point is that he's the all-star break and nobody has already done it.
No, I mean, what Cal is doing is obviously historic, but I think the most important thing about this home run derby and this summer in particular, and I keep saying this is the most fun Mariners team since 1995 for me. It has been like such an incredible ride with this team, and there's still more time to go. You know, like, we are not even at the trade deadline yet with this roster. And I think the roster is going to evolve in these next couple of weeks. But even as much as it has so far this season, when we went from, Cal struggled the first couple of weeks of the season. Before the torpedo bat, Cal wasn't hitting well.
Such a long time ago. It's completely forgotten now.
I mean, it should be forgotten because he's had such, like, we shouldn't be remembering the first 2 weeks of Cal struggling, but like, seasons.
But we should
evolve,
be remembering
so
them to put in context, like, how amazing what he has accomplished overall is.
We knew who Cole Young was at that point, but like, Cole Young is entrenched at second base now. You know, like, this roster has transformed. Dom Canzone is an important player in the lineup. We're not talking about Robles and just how seasons evolve, but for me, pound for pound, there's not a more fun season that they've had. I mean, the most recent one was 2022, right? That was kind of even registered in the same conversation. And then
in terms of fun, yeah, I would say that the 2022, when they ended a 21-year playoff drought.
But
yeah.
Like, that summer, it was during the summer is when it was just so much fun to watch the Mariners and to tune in. And this week, it's been awesome because it feels like, I didn't get to see the All-Star game today, but having Cal in that moment, I mean, 2022 had Julio, right? In the home run derby. And the thing that I was saying to the children was, I was like, when he wasn't favored going in the second round, I was just like, to everybody out there, be careful, because a big first round is often not a good thing. And I kind of just, you had a feeling where it was like, if he got there, he was going to make it happen. And let me tell you, the conspiracy theorists named Brent Rooker are out. And an answer for Brent Rooker is, you're right. Because ESPN and Major League Baseball were going to do anything in their power to get Cal Raleigh to that second round. He is the most marketable baseball star since.
I don't know that I buy that.
We are going back real far.
I don't think he's that marketable, but I do think he is like.
He is, you don't think he's that marketable? Cal is number one. He looks like, do you know people? How many people like me are out there playing baseball every single weekend? And do you know what Cal Raleigh and his brother and his dad look like?
But I think what it is that Cal, do they not look like Brent Rooker?
Brent Rooker is just not like that. Brent Rooker doesn't have the nickname. You know, he doesn't have the moments. You know, he doesn't have Brent anything. Rooker he plays for Athletics, a team that doesn't even have a city.
I mean,
he plays for a team in a minor league ballpark. Like, no, Brent Rooker does not. This is Cal Raleigh.
You don't think
is,
it would have been a moment, his kids being there?
Sure, yeah. I mean, it might have been a moment, but it's like for the people of Sacramento, like Seattle is the epicenter of baseball right now. It is a huge, huge summer for Seattle Mariners.
Cal is the biggest story going right now because of the fact that he's doing what he's doing, and it came so far out of nowhere.
But he's also having a bigger season than almost any player has had. Like right, maybe it's Trout, but I think Cal's more marketable than Trout.
Oh, my Trout was famously unmarketable.
He has personality. Like, baseball is important again. And maybe this is biased because I'm in Seattle, but we saw that the ratings were way up. You're welcome. But you personally, that the ratings were way up for this home run derby. It is Cal Raleigh who those ratings were for. This is not Seattle. This is America who's behind Cal Raleigh. I don't know. It is an incredible moment. And the Mariners fucking locked him up before the year for pretty good money.
It could not have possibly worked out more perfectly.
I mean, say what you will about Jerry DePoto, but like that was... And every move that they have made with regards to Cal has been pretty dead on. But the other thing is, he's an American success story as well, because he talked about, like, he wasn't highly recruited. He was never a top 100 prospect. It was just keep going, keep going, keep going. He's not young. He's a fucking catcher. Like, everything about Cal is so inspiring.
The fact
right
that
now,
there's a video of him as an 8-year-old talking about winning the home run derby. Like, we never made those videos when we did it.
But he is still like,
also,
you can see him.
The videos all would have featured Michael Bernazzani winning the home run derby.
He's a pretty good hitter.
I mean, also that porch in right field, perfectly tailored for his left hand swing at the Pelton Field.
I think the MLB is very excited. The city of Seattle and the MLB are very excited about Cal and this second half that he's going to have. But it's one of the most important, since Judge, at least a couple years ago, when he was chasing the AL record, right? And I do think Aaron Judge is very marketable, but like Aaron Judge is superhuman. You know what I mean?
Right.
When you look at Aaron Judge, you're not like, whoa.
I don't think Aaron Judge is the comparison here. I think Brent Rooker is the comparison.
Yeah, if Brent Rooker is the comparison, there's no conversation right now.
Brent Rooker had a monster All-Star game, by the way.
I mean, this is not an insult to Brent Rooker, but like Brent Rooker is not a marketable star. Cal Raleigh is like the face of baseball right now. It is it. He is the most important baseball in the country. I was going to say, not the world. Shohei is the most important baseball player in the world. But like in the country, Cal Raleigh is the most important baseball player. It is wild. It is wild times. And it is so fun to be a Mariners fan right now.
I agree. One week after, it was not fun at all to be a Mariners fan. Things really got much... like our, when we recorded last week, we were still very optimistic because it was before game one of the Yankees series. And then the Yankees series went about as poorly as it could before.
I blame a rain delay.
As you
this
mentioned,
team doesn't handle weather. They actually did win in Detroit with the rain delay, so they finally handled some delays better.
But that was before the game, not once they got started.
No, they still had a hard time in Minnesota when it was before the game, too.
Okay.
I feel like it threw them off in that series also, because it was sort of the, like, will they, won't they, right?
Right.
Yeah, it was like a Ross and Rachel series, that one. But they, like, they...
Timely reference.
if I've been watching Love Island, I would probably have a more recent one, but you wouldn't know what I was talking about, so...
I have watched an episode of Love Island, for the record. Maybe two.
Wow. Okay. You're more up on it than I am.
Cal Raleigh went 1-for-2 in Tuesday's All-Star game. Had a single.
There were not a lot of hits in that game either, right?
Nine total for the AL, nine total for the NL. So one of 18. Randy Rosarena off the bench, 0 for 3 with a strikeout. Brian Wu, the third pitcher into the game, th threw about the best possible inning, 8 pitches, a strikeout, and 3 outs, and out, and his night was done. Andres Munoz coming into this one in the eighth to get out of that inning, despite surrendering a walk. And then AL wins, or the NL wins it 4-3 on the home run swing off tiebreaker.
We
So,
also have to note that the Mariners clearly have broken Drake's Google.
oh, he wants no part of the Mariners.
Washed. The man is washed.
Just no part whatsoever of the Mariners. It looks like the swing off is not even referenced in the ESPN box score, so I'm not totally sure who hit the home runs here and who didn't.
Schwarber.
Okay, that looks about right.
I didn't get to see it, sadly. I was at F1 because I needed to see an ad for Heineken 0.0. And it mentions it in the video right next to it. And at the top, NL wins on home run swing off tiebreaker. But I don't know if you'd record those as home runs.
What do you mean?
Or I don't know where you'd put it in a box score.
Well, just in the play-by-play, you could put it. But yeah, it's unorthodox, so they didn't have a spot for it. So
But
here we go.
the weekend series overall, I don't want to say save the season because the season didn't necessarily need saving, but just how bad the vibes were after the New York series. And the Mariners hit fairly well in that series, but just couldn't get it out in the short portion. Right field kind of crushed them a lot of times. Helped Cole Young get his first home run, but he did not need help getting his second home run in the ninth inning on Sunday. A monster blast for Cole Young, which I'm pretty excited, showing a little pop right now from Cole. But that series, coupled with what I told you would happen with the Astros, a little bit of a slide.
I hate to admit it, but you are correct. They're within
I mean,
five games.
but if your prediction was this baseball team will never fade, that's not a great
Don't
prediction.
know if that was my prediction necessarily, but heading into a series this weekend, coming out of the All-Star break, Mariners hosting the Astros.
So it's eerily similar. I believe this was the 2023 season that the Mariners were in almost the exact same situation. And I want to say from memory, they might have gotten swept out of the All-Star break. I could be wrong about that. There might have been an Angels series that they got. Maybe that was last year.
In 2003, they started the post All-Star break by playing Detroit, Minnesota, and Toronto in a homestand. So no,
In
definitely was not
2023.
them. 2024, they did start the second half at home versus Houston and lost 2 out of 3 in that one.
Okay. So, but that was basically they had this moment where it's like they can make up some clear ground in that series. For the Mariners, every series is the most important series. This is it right here. There's a lot of games left after this, but if they really want to win the AL West, they've got to at least win this series. They don't have to sweep, but they have to at least win the series. It's a kitchen sink series to do everything that they can. Everybody should be rested. Everybody should be feeling good. Julio took this time off. Julio looked great
Yeah, we
also
didn't
in
talk about
Detroit.
that. Yeah, the reason Randy Arozarena was in the All-Star game was because Julio Rodriguez opted not to participate. Spent the weekend, I believe, did I see this correctly? He spent the weekend Sacramento?
Did
I know he was in California.
hyping up Brent Rooker the whole time?
Oh,
He's like, y'all don't know about Brent? What a home run derby. Great first round.
Julio Rodriguez, Sacramento, brings up an information about a reliever named Julio Rodriguez for the Astros in the minor leagues who was suspended for a PED test.
Fair
Not
enough.
that Julio Rodriguez. I'm gonna keep looking. The Google AI is
Even
not so
having
great.
Randy there, though, the vibes with Randy Arozarena supporting Cal at the home run derby, it was just like you knew he wasn't going to lose because he had Randy on his side. That was it.
Maybe I missed on this. Maybe it has nothing to do with Sacramento.
It was a great moment. Julio got some rest, looked very good. It felt like everybody's kind of figuring it out at the right time right now, top to bottom. There's one player who happened to get hit in the All-Star game.
WRC plus over the past month. Yeah, I think
a little nervy there. But the amount of teams who think they are trading for Eugenio Suarez is, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, the Mariners are definitely signing Shohei. And then there's like 12 other teams that also felt like they were. There's a lot of teams. I think that the asking price for Suarez is going to get pretty high. And we'll see. And I think that's the question that the Mariners are going to have to ask themselves is the upgrade over Ben Williamson worth it? And I think, you know, these next two series, three series, are going to be pretty informative for that question. But if they do well, you kind of end up in a position where you're like, we're doing fine right now. We don't necessarily need to shake things up. Or do you go all in? It's kind of a like,
I don't think they're going to think that.
It's a little bit of a damned if you do, damned if you don't type of situation. But the value of, it depends on what the asking price is going to be. It's going to be a lot, though, considering how many teams are in the market for an Eugenio Suarez and how good he's playing. It's going to take legit prospects.
Without question.
Or legit starting pitching. So
it's certainly going to take a lot more than Arizona gave up to get him.
Yes. Say what you will about Jerry DePoto, but that was a horrible fucking decision.
Jerry DePoto, on the other hand, not missed.
I think they had a very hard, aside from now, Jorge Polanco, even Garver, though, is getting in the mix over the weekend.
Yeah.
So Jorge getting to where Jorge has gotten to makes that offseason look a little bit better now with hindsight, but I don't know. I'm feeling very good about some bold predictions or Mariners hot takes. I think one actually was a bold prediction. Mariners hot takes that I've made about the team in the last couple of weeks. And this is it. This is the summer. This is the summer to be a Mariners fan because it's been phenomenal. And
except for the parts where it isn't.
Another big moment for them over the weekend.
Yeah, I forgot to put any information about this in the notes, but Sunday was, as we discussed, the MLB draft, and the Mariners picking at number 3 were surprised when, by all accounts, the top player on their board, LSU left-handed pitcher Cade Anderson, was available for them for the 3rd pick, because the player that had been discussed as a possible below slot signing for them at number draft pick at number 3 for them, instead went number 2 to the Los Angeles Angels.
Oh, people had talked about the Mariners possibly drafting him.
This I saw this in the ESPN mock draft on Sunday, the day of the draft. So it didn't come completely out of order, but or unexpected. But the fact that you even went higher than number 3 was to a degree kind of shocking. That's Tyler Bremner, a right-handed pitcher out of UC Santa Barbara, who was rated number 18 by ESPN. Entering the draft, Cade Anderson was the number one most outstanding player at the College World Series, led LSU to the title, one run in 17 innings, including a one run, 1-0 shutout in the finals. Commands his fastball well and carries well in the zone, so it plays up over its 92 to 94 mile an hour velocity. And someone who's probably going to be on the fast track to the major leagues if everything goes correctly.
They freaking did it. I mean, everything aligned for the Mariners right here. And the Angels did an Angels thing with that pick. And especially to just set a division rival up after you to go out and maybe get the best player in the draft. I mean, the Mariners probably had who was number 2 on the ESPN list? Was it Ethan Holliday?
Ethan Holliday was 2, yes.
So the Mariners had the option with pick 3 to go out and get, from ESPN standards, either of the 2 best players in the draft, the best hitter and the best pitcher in the draft. Literally could not ask for anything more. Like I said, it has been a very fun summer to be a Mariners fan. I saw that I was watching children's baseball and I had in my ear the MLB draft and I saw pick 1 and I was like, okay, there's going to be somebody good out there. And then I saw pick 2 and I was like, wow, I've never heard of this person. I've read not a ton of draft stuff, but I'd read some draft stuff. And then it was kind of like, when that happened, I was like, oh, they're drafting Cade Anderson. It's such a Mariners pick. They love it. They love everything about it. To get a college pitcher a little bit safer with that pick, chance to be a front end starter, maybe not Paul Skeens, but like an all-star caliber starter with that third pick. And they have a young-ish rotation, but Luis Castillo is the one that you look at and you're like, by the time Cade Anderson is at the point, also it makes some other players a little bit more expendable if they need to in trades, if there are superstar hitters out there to be had. This is an A-plus for the Mariners.
Yeah, no complaints here. And then they ended up agreeing to a deal with him that was below slot for the number three pick.
That was incredible.
Bizarre.
I don't know how
Cherry
they did
on
that.
Top here.
It feels like I don't know if you've ever done a Madden draft and you can't see what the rating is. And then after the draft is over and you see like what their overall rating is, it feels like the Mariners got the number one player in the draft by overall rating at the third pick. Like they unveiled it after and it's like, yep, you got the steal of the draft. I mean, I think Holiday too going forth. But it's like he's in Colorado. That makes sense where he should be. Everybody ended up where they should be. I mean, Jamie Arnold was the one going to the A's Athletics at pick 11. Where it's like, but at the same time, whatever. You know, a division rival getting a player who's also good is fine, especially when the Angels did Angels things at pick two.
It was a choice of all the possible choices. That was definitely one of them. To talk quickly about the Mariners' second round picks, they had the
comp picks. There was an end of first round. I don't know if it's second round.
Yeah,
because
it's sorry, competitive balance round A, pick 35, is where they took North Carolina catcher Luke Stevenson. So interesting to add to that particular position. I mean, certainly by the time Luke Stevenson is ready for the major leagues, you don't know if Cal Raleigh is going to be playing catcher on a regular basis. Or, you know, if Lucas Stevenson will be ready for the major leagues, but an interesting spot to draft.
I told everybody, you do not draft for position need in baseball, in my opinion.
No, probably not. Took a prep shortstop, Nick Becker, from Don Bosco Prep High School in New Jersey with pick 57, their actual second-round pick. Third round, took Miami pitcher Griffin Hugues, which certainly hope he's good. Because you're gonna want Griffin Hugues to be good, and then Dallas Baptist pitcher Mason Peters in round four.
I think Luke Stevenson's an interesting one. I mean, a little bit of pop, right? 19 home runs and 290 plate appearances for him in college. So, a bit of a power hitting catcher. Only played 2 years in college, and it'll be a little bit of a project. You know, he'll take some time, but obviously, building up depth. If there's one place that you want to have depth in your organization, it is catcher. You only play one of them, but you need many of them. So, and it's something like catchers can go move and play whatever other position after that, and you'll be fine. We'll see what becomes of Harry Ford, but to me, having as many catchers as possible is the right way to do it. You know, they're kind of like the offensive lineman of the system. And then some Northwest players. I have Arquette, who was linked to the Mariners. I don't know if there's ever a real possibility that they would have drafted him. It felt like they're probably going pitching. I think he went number 7 to the Marlins.
That is correct, yes.
And then Xavier Nayans from Mount Vernon. I was like, pretty cool. I think it's the 17th pick by the Astros.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yep.
It was not the 17th pick then.
Maybe he was a little bit later.
Number 21.
21.
Corbin Carroll, the last prep hitter from Washington State to go in the first round in 2019, just 10th in MLB history, according to ESPN.
10th Washington State player?
Prep hitter.
In the first round? Wow. Look at that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's pretty cool for Xavier Nance. It's sad where he ended up, but to be the 21st pick in the draft is... And you never know. It's like, you're not always going to make the majors with the team that you're on. You may find a way
it's
home.
It's very unlikely you make the majors when you're with the team you're on. I don't know, very unlikely, but...
I would guess first-round picks are more likely to debut with the team that drafted them than not, would be my guess.
Anything else on the Mariners?
I'm feeling great right now. It was a great weekend.
I
to the statue
to you,
being unveiled.
No, do you break into the roundup with additional Mariners thoughts? But let's get back to the toasts for now.
I mean, I guess the last thought that I have is Cade Anderson is going to, I don't know if they do top 100 prospects midseason. I assume that they do post-draft.
I don't know when the update is.
He is instantly going to be the number one player in the organization. That's it, right? Cole Emerson is great. Everybody else is great. He is the number one player in the organization. I mean, he's probably a top 10 prospect in all of baseball.
I don't know if you can be a top 10 prospect in all of baseball if you weren't the number one pick in your draft, but I get what you're saying. If you weren't,
you definitely can.
I'm saying immediately after the draft.
They're not going, when they're ranking the prospects, they're not going to have Luke Bremner or whatever.
I get that part of it, but there wasn't like considered to be a clear separate. Like Cade Anderson was the number one, but I don't think there was considered to be a massive separation among the top players in this year's draft, which is why there was so much uncertainty about how the order was going to go.
How about this? The first is, if there is a Baseball America, which I assume there is, midseason top prospects list, I bet you that he will be in the top 10.
I'll take the over on that.
Okay. There's no over. Over on 10, if the over under is 10.5. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, they only ranked him as the fourth best overall draft prospect.
Baseball America?
Yeah.
What did they have?
I'm just seeing that information on its own. So I don't know the full context of who was ahead of him. All right, let's get back to the toast, starting with a congratulations to friend of the pod, Brent Berry, who will join Amazon Prime's NBA coverage as a color analyst after spending last season as an assistant for the Suns. Brent was obviously very excited about the coaching path and, hoping he gets back to it. But for now, very exciting news for all of us because Brent is awesome as a color analyst and love to have him on the air again. We're also this week remembering longtime Mariners coach Lee Elia, who passed away Wednesday at age 87. Elia served as hitting coach for the Mariners from 1993 through 97, then returned as bench coach for 2001 and 2002, spent 2008 as a special assistant in the organization after his on-field days were done. Someone who's remembered nationally, certainly much more for his time as the manager of the Cubs and the profane rant he unleashed about the bums at Wrigley Field after a game. I gotta remember who was the broadcaster who recorded that. Oh, Les Grossman. He was definitely somebody who I ran across when he was broadcasting the Chicago Sky games down the line. So he was a bit of a legend in Chicago sports. Les Grobstein, the Grobber. But in Seattle, known as part of Lou Piniella's first coaching staff here and part of the season of record, so as well as part of the 116 win team. So certainly a special place in Mariners fans' hearts for Lee Elia. Our search for Seattle's best cookie has resumed with Volunteer Park Cafe and Pantry. Volunteer Park Cafe and Pantry. The original cafe here closed in 2020 after 13 years before reopening in 2021 with Canlis alumna Crystal Chu is the pastry chef. Chu spent several years staging, working, and traveling in the Asia-Pacific region before being hired in Canlis. And I feel like you can see some of that influence, certainly, in the cookies that they have at Volunteer Park Cafe and Pantry. I don't know why I can't pronounce that. So I went there last Thursday and picked up...
Yogging? Volunteering? You don't get paid?
We had the cherry chocolate oat and citrus Earl Grey caramelized white chocolate cookie.
I had no idea what I was eating.
That's true. You got no description of this because we did not.
I had nothing. I just, Jan was like, here's some cookies. And I was like, bottoms up. Let's go. I didn't know where they were from. I didn't know what I was eating. But what I did know, they're pretty freaking excellent.
So we've been, and here's what's amazing. We did not have the gluten-free buckwheat chocolate chunk cookie that placed on the Infatuation's best chocolate chips, cookies, in Seattle list and led us to Volunteer Park Cafe and Pantry. And based on that, I got to tell you, I think this is a place we need to go again.
Oh, I mean, they're in the bracket. There's no doubt to me about eating these cookies that they are in the bracket.
The
unless you can't pronounce Volunteer.
I really don't know what the holdup is, but maybe I can practice it in the mirror and figure it out. I don't know. We got to figure out what
You're in
the
the home of capitalism right now. It's okay.
bracket actually looks like. But the cherry chocolate
Just
oat,
as long as it's complicated, please.
obviously, the cherry chocolate oat was remarkably moist throughout and flavorful. There wasn't really a lot of cookie, I would say. It was like kind of dominated by the chocolate chunks and the
Was that the one I
cherries.
only had half of?
Yes.
Is because was there only one, or are you being stingy?
There was only one.
Okay. It's like, damn.
I wasn't like, no, you only get half a cookie.
Okay, because I will say I wanted more. I had that and I was like,
I wanted more too. We all wanted more. You could have gotten
motherfucker.
none. I could have eaten it all.
You probably should have. I might have if it were me. Yeah,
Would
no. I mean,
you?
I wish that I kind of knew which was which before I had them. And also, it's been a while since I had them. I mean, but it was one of those moments where Jan literally showed up to the BMX track, handed me some cookies, and I ate them, and I was just like, well, these are great. I mean, that's kind of the extent of my thoughts. I can definitely analyze it a little closer, having a little bit more intentional choice, but they were clearly bracket-worthy cookies. And I think they're in the mix right now, like deeply in the mix.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So if I look at it, including Met Market, we have nine cookies in the bracket right now.
What if we move Met Market to a different pot?
We could do that.
No insult to Met Market necessarily, but it's just a little difficult.
Since you can't eat the cookie,
Yes.
it is a bit of an issue. And plausibly an argument for why they aren't Seattle's best cookies. If their cookies are inedible to anyone who has nut allergies and half inedible to anyone who has tree nut allergies, as you do. So there's been an asterisk by them all along. But I'm willing to make that change.
Are there others that we need to go to, or do we have our eight then?
There
To
is
be clear.
one more that is on there, the infatuation list that we are considering. But otherwise, we could go to the eight. Again, it depends on the timing of if we're going to do a live podcast.
Tell me the eight
Maybe at
cookies.
Brad Garrett's Comedy Club.
They won't let me in. I'm locked out of that place. We're gonna have to do it at the bunkhouse saloon.
Treat,
Okay.
Chicorina, Bells.
I sure hope Chicorina still exists. Okay.
They do, yes.
Okay.
I'm following them on Instagram. Hello, Robin.
Yep.
Heard of them. Saint Bread.
Yes.
Cookie Break.
Which was Cookie Break?
Cookie Break was the one that's in someone's house, I believe.
Oh, you had me at someone's house.
Ben's Bread, and then Volunteer Park Cafe and Pantry.
I will say, heading into it's we've kind of got tiers. We have sort of like the classics, right? Bell's, Hello Robin, Treat are the classics. And then we've got that bakery tier. Saint Bread, Ben's Bread, Volunteer Park Cafe.
I mean, I would put Chicorina in that as well. Like,
In the bakery
they're not
territory.
as full of bakery. They're more pastry specific, but or sweet specific, but similarly, it's not just cookies.
I have no idea what the I don't think there's probably a favorite. I think we should rank them 1 through 8, but right now, to me, something of Ben's Bread, Saint Bread, Volunteer Park Cafe, I would guess, is probably in the lead if I was making odds for this.
So you have them over the cookie only locations.
It this is going so much just from emotional memory of it at this point, rather than, it's a lot of places that I had one time. But if you were to ask me right now, I mean, I would take almost any cookie right now, but I feel like if it was, you could choose one of those places and you get a cookie from there right now, Saint Bread or Ben's Bread.
Well, I'm very curious to find out. And the other consideration is if we do want to do overly complicated, we could do the best bakery cookie and the best
Maybe we
cookie.
award in the end if somebody isn't going to win, and if we have a head-to-head of the two, or we could separate the brackets, four on one side.
Right, that's what I'm thinking.
Because we've got Treat, Hello Robin,
Bells and Cookie Break.
Bells and okay. Yeah, let's do it that way.
Okay.
Let's pit them together. And whoever wins will either win. You'll be best cookie place cookie if you win that, and then you'll be best bakery cookie if you win that side, and then they will compete for Seattle's best cookie.
Is this complicated enough, though?
No, it's all too clear.
Wow.
It all makes sense to me.
Huge
Most
mistake.
Importantly, we get to eat cookies.
Correct. Should we get into the roundup? Because we have an interesting story. Oh, no, we shouldn't, because we should talk about the NBA CL update now, presented by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza.
Is
In
this
the
the interesting
update,
story? Or?
No.
Okay.
That's not the interesting story. That's coming next. The NBA's Seattle update is, to some degree, a non-update, I guess I would say. So this week was, as we've talked about, the Board of Governors meetings in Las Vegas, where expansion was for the first time on the agenda for NBA ownership to discuss. And what came out of that, per Adam Silver in his opening address to media at a press conference they attended and covered for ESPN, is ultimately the league office was tasked by our board with doing an in-depth analysis of all the issues around expansion, both economic and non-economic. Went through what that entails a little bit, and then said, concluded with, so there are all things that we're in the process of talking about. As I said, a lot of analysis still needs to be done. Nothing has been predetermined one way or the other, and without any specific timeline, we're going to be as thorough as possible and look at all the potential issues. He then explained that it's going to be overseen. One of the expectations was that perhaps they would announce an expansion committee at this meeting that would specifically be responsible for looking at expansion, researching these issues, discussing possible cities, things of that nature. Instead, they did not do that and said that they're going to rely on existing committees, the Advisory Finance Committee, that has primary jurisdiction, according to Adam Silver, and the Audit and Strategy Committee, looking at the economics of it. Later asked about the timeline and expansion fees by Chris Daniels from King Five, not from King Five anymore, from Como Four, I should say, said, beyond that, it's, as I said, it's really day one of the analysis. He said, so I think there is a significant step now, a significant step forward in this process, and that we are engaging in this in-depth analysis, something we were prepared to do before. But beyond that, as I said, it's really day one of that analysis. So in terms of price, potential timing, too early to say. Later said there was no straw poll taken in the room, that there was no sense in the room that people were taking sides, pro and con, on expansion. There was no request that people indicate pro or con. There was a consensus quickly formed that the league office should do the work and work with these particular committees in the board and present that analysis. Did talk later about the issue of the local media rights that we've talked about is a potential factor in why this might be slowing down a little bit as compared to what we hoped. He said it would be something I think would be malpracticing if we didn't figure out how local and regional television is going to work before expanding. The notion that we hand over a team to a city we are not currently operating in and say you're going to have to figure out how you distribute your games to your local fans doesn't make any sense. So that's something that they're going to continue to talk about. Tim Booth asked him, sort of specifically about Seattle. Said, I think the next step is looking at specific markets, understanding what the opportunities in those markets are, and understanding the facilities that are available for us to play in, understanding the level of interest from local business, understanding the overall appetite in those markets that are expressing interest to us. Did also say, Seattle is an incredible market. I wish standing here as the commissioner, I had teams to dispense to many different markets who are interested in NBA basketball. And then the last question about this, I got a chance to ask at the end of the press conference and asked him if forming an expansion committee would be part of the decision-making process, or that it's not something that they would do until they committed to expansion, said that the committees that are existing that are looking at it now, because of the fact that they're not in the middle of negotiating a media deal or collective bargaining agreement, those committees have more time to devote to it. That those committees together represent roughly half of the owners in the league, the principal owners, said, I'll leave open the possibility that at some point it's necessary to have yet another committee, but our committees are comprised of only the 30 principal owners. So you have the right people, I think, involved in the process right now.
That was a lot of words and you kind of lost me there. Are you exhausted? What does all of this mean?
We're still figuring that. We're still digesting and figuring that out. I think in the moment, like I said, the fact that there wasn't an expansion committee announced as we sort of expected. And the other backdrop to this is The Athletic had an article on Tuesday morning, indicating that the NBA's timeline was going to soften to a degree that there, were owners, multiple owners, as Bill Simmons has reported, led by James Dolan of the Knicks, who's been a vocal opponent behind closed doors, apparently, on this issue, as he has on many NBA issues lately. He's been
Cool
sort
guy.
of in opposition to the league office because of his general frustrations on a number of fronts. But again, The Athletic reported he's not alone on this, which is what Simmons indicated as well.
When did Simmons talk about this? I thought Simmons had been on team. It's done. It's happening.
I don't know if that shifted to a degree. I'm not sure exactly when he mentioned this, but he definitely did. They reported that one of the big things is that there are owners that want to see how it plays out with the money from the new national TV deals before they start to make a decision.
Okay.
So there's
I'm
always a
this
reason to push
close.
things.
We are teetering right now to when we're talking about James Dolan is making decisions about this and the
He's
type of
not
people.
making decisions, but it's a vote.
I understand
The
that.
people have to
James
vote
Dolan is
for it.
influencing these things. I know you don't like this train of thought,
I
but
don't know
like,
that James Dolan is even influencing things. I would say
isn't
that
James
James
Dolan
Dolan.
part of Oakview Group also?
No, he's not. He sold his stake in that to try to expand the spheres.
He was part of Oakview Group, though.
He was. We'll get to Oakview Group in a moment.
Okay. I just.
So, again, Adam Silver tried to put a very positive spin on this is advancing the process. It wasn't the step that we were hoping for, but. I think that's where my question was the most interesting thing that came out of this, not, because of any great work by me, just because of what he happened to say, in terms of if they don't necessarily need to form an expansion committee to make a decision on expansion, then the fact that they didn't form an expansion committee should not be taken as a concern.
Got it. Okay.
So that's where we are. But I mean, he also has continued to say, as he would, as any good lawyer would, that no decisions have been made, nothing is predetermined, that they have to go through this process. And I think that's partially a process of convincing people that might be on the fence to vote in favor of it. So that's where we are.
Cool.
And then also, the degree of negotiating, what's the price going to be? Something The Athletic article did float is the possibility that, teams might not, expansion teams might not get full media shares for some period of time, sort of like when Oregon and Washington got into the Big Ten by taking a half share during the current TV deal, like, nothing that
Sure.
specific, but
I mean, they should do that. Fine.
then there's that much less money you're willing to pay for it.
I guess so, but the values don't go down.
The other important thing Adam Silver said in this press conference is that when asked about the sale of the Blazers by our buddy Sean Hyken of Rip City Report, noted that said that Portland will likely need a new arena, which is not something that we had heard previously.
And why?
Moda Center is one of the oldest arenas in the league, opened in 1995, the same year as Key Arena. It certainly is in need of some love. There have been some renovations planned and actually underway in the past, but over future summers that currently are on pause as ownership waits out that sale of the team, and they wouldn't have happened next summer with the Portland Fire, who I didn't put in my notes, but they announced that their name is going to be the Fire officially and unveiled their logo on Tuesday. So a lot going on in Northwest basketball.
Fair enough. I think the Moda Center is great and it's fine to be at.
I enjoy attending games at the Moda Center.
I've loved being at the Moda Center. It's one of those things. It's basically what you're saying is they're not able to monetize. The newer stadiums are so much better at monetizing the audience of the games.
Yeah, I mean that's always it. And Moda Center isn't bad at it. It's also just it's older. It needs some love. So, we'll see whether that can be accomplished via, a larger scale renovation than has been envisioned or what the situation is.
I could say this about every sport that we talk about, basically, except for hydroplane racing. The sport and the athletes who play it generally are good. Everything else surrounding it is terrible.
I mean, we're part of everything else surrounding it.
I guess that's true, but I just feels this whole process feels so gross to talk about. I guess, is kind of how, like, the Moda Center needs renovations. Like, sure, I guess it needs renovations. There's no reason that it needs renovations, but sure, to make more money. Like, dog, everybody's fine. Everybody is fine.
We can, all we can do is pass along the information and provide context surrounding it.
Yeah, but the Moda Center doesn't need to be renovated. It may, people may want it to be renovated, but it definitely doesn't need to be renovated.
You know, and my feeling that almost any time someone says needs, they actually mean wants.
Yeah, not a good enough lawyer.
Well, no, the lawyer would say needs. It's a negotiating position.
And just the whole expansion process is like the minutiae that we're talking about and all of the roadblocks that have been put up. Like, I'm still going to remain optimistic, I suppose, but I'm also going to remain deeply skeptical.
It's not up to Adam Silver to decide. It's up to
this is not about Adam Silver necessarily. This is about, I don't know. I don't think Adam Silver is a billionaire. This is about the billionaire owners in the NBA. Like, that is who I'm deeply skeptical about. And the decisions that they're making are not necessarily in the interest of basketball. You know, like, it's profits, right? It's a capitalistic decision. The decision to expand to be capitalistic, the decision to not expand would be also. And that's where it's kind of like, the parts where we talk about the athletes, that's way more fun, right? Cal Raleigh is fun to talk about. But the parts where we talk about the bickerings of billionaires, it's just like, okay, fine. It's information that's happening. But the like, will they, won't they, and the like leaking out of information and the teasing, it is very difficult to keep following after this many years.
I mean, I don't know that I think you're obligated to. Could be like recruiting.
Just this podcast. I know, but I don't need to. And I don't want to either.
Well, should we get into the roundup? Because it does relate to this a little bit. I mentioned we were going to get to Oakview. Some pretty shocking news last week is Oakview CEO Tim Leiweke was indicted by the Department of Justice on charges related to rigging bidding to build and manage Moody Center for University of Texas Athletics with a potential competitor. As part of an investigation, Oakview Group agreed to pay a $15 million fine to enter a non-prosecution agreement with the Department of Justice. Leiweke stepped down as CEO after the indictment, but does remain vice chairman of the board as well as a shareholder of Oakview Group. So, particularly interesting in context of not only the fact that Oakview Group built and continues to manage Climate Pledge Arena, where there was a competing bid, it is worth noting, but also the sort of the familial relationship between Tim Leiweke and his brother Todd, the CEO of the Kraken. Todd is not implicated, obviously, in any way in this scheme and not affected by it, but certainly interesting evolved also in the context of Oakview was at one point or for a long period of time working to develop an NBA-ready arena in Las Vegas that could have been a potential home for an expansion team.
Does this mean anything beyond that? Are there any greater ripple effects or implications? Or
tough to say at this point. Sort of need more time to see how things play out. But one we will continue certainly to monitor. All right, Seattle Sounders. A wild match. So the Sounders.
We should have just ended after the Mariners and cookies.
Oh, well, we had to do the NBA update. Well, no, we wanted to do the NBA. A wild match saw the Sounders score 3 in the first half, then hold on. Jordan Morris, making his first start since April, opened the scoring with his first goal since March with Albert Rushnak adding a PK and Jesus Ferreira a third goal in stoppage time. Morris subbed out at halftime. In Sporting KC, got one back from the spot in the 67th minute, then put in a bunch of pressure on the Sounders. Did score another penalty in the second half, stoppage time. And during the review of this penalty, Nuhu became the latest Sounders defender to be sent off, this time for a straight red for throwing a ball at a fan. In the fourth consecutive match, the Sounders have had a player sent off in MLS play in four matches.
He threw a ball at a fan for the fourth consecutive. I feel like they should be able to stop that.
I agree that they would. He would obviously not be eligible due to suspension to continue that streak. According to Sounder at Heart, the all-time MLS record is red cards in 5 consecutive games. So Sounders have a chance to tie them.
Hello.
Sounders was actually outdone in XG in this one based on allowing 21 shots, 9 on target. But Andrew Thomas, filling in for the injured Stefan Fry, stood strong in goal with six saves and also benefited from an Alex Rodon goal line clearance that prevented a goal.
Did you see the situation of him throwing the ball at the fan? Like, what happened?
You know, it seemed based on, I don't think he's spoken to the media, but it seemed based on what he indicated on the video that he was flipped off by some fans behind the goal that were engaging with him. And
that's
that
it.
That was his explanation.
I kind of feel like that's probably not worth a red card, being flipped off.
Brian Schmetzer said Tuesday, I'm a very patient man, but I do have a limit. We talked about leadership, talked about keeping who he is, but I need him, this is obviously referring to Nuhu, to mature a little bit. This latest incident, he didn't show signs of it. Schmetzer did say that nothing racist was said by fans. So there you go. Sounders with tied for fourth in the West standings with Portland, although LAFC also has more points per match. They've got an important chance at a 6-point week with two teams on the fringes of the West playoff hunt coming to Lumen Field. Colorado, who plays here Wednesday night, is 7th, San Jose 8th in the West standings. So the Earthquakes actually boast a better goal differential somehow than the Sounders at +5. So that one could be competitive. Seattle Reign FC still in
the
midst.
Let me ask you, if an MLS soccer player flipped off a fan, is that red card worthy?
I don't know. That might just be
I don't
a
feel like it is, right? That's a yellow at most.
I don't know the precedent.
I feel like it's a yellow to nothing.
All right, Seattle Reign making news during the NWSL break. They announced Thursday that they have signed U.S. Women's National Team forward Mia Fischel from Chelsea for what my ESPN colleague Jeff Kasouf reported is believed to be the largest cumulative deal in NWSL history.
Hello.
At nearly $2.5 million through 2029. The UCLA product was the number 5 pick in the 2022 NWSL draft, but opted instead to sign with Tigres in Liga MX Femenil, won the Golden Boot in her debut Apertura with 17 goals in as many games, then signed with Chelsea in August 2023 for a reported $250,000 transfer fee. While training with the U.S. Women's National Team for the 2024 CONCACAF W Gold Cup, Fischel suffered an ACL tear that sidelined her for more than a year. Returned in March, but ended with two Chelsea goals and 14 appearances, never really quite winning over the trust of coach Sonia Bompastor. So this move reunites her with Reign coach Laura Harvey, for whom she played with the U20 national team in 2020, scoring two goals in the final, a 4-1 win over Mexico. And this is the latest move for the Reign, building a new generation with Fischel, who's 24, joining 19-year-old forward Emery Adames, 23-year-old midfielder Sam Meza, and the defensive duo of 24-year-old Madison Curry and 18-year-old Jordan Bug. You know, they've still got kind of this older generation led by Lynn Biendolo, led by Jess Fishlock, and, you know, the kind of the Fishlock, the old mainstay, Biendolo, a current USWNT star, but now these up-and-coming USWNT players that could be part of the foundation for the Reign for many years to come.
This is a pretty massive signing, right?
I mean, again, believed to be the largest cumulative deal in NWSL history.
Wow. All right. I mean, that young generation that you're talking about sounds pretty phenomenal, with the youth movement having a superstar at the top, who sounds like she hasn't quite like fully realized her potential necessarily outside of that first season. But
I mean, her entire
a
time,
a lot
in,
to build from
you know, Liga MX Femenil is not the same level of competition, certainly, is NWSL or the WPL. I'm not for sure what the Women's League in England is, but 38 goals in 38 matches overall, I believe. Or maybe it was slightly more matches. Maybe it was like 43 matches. But she scored a lot of goals for Tigres.
Yeah. All right.
All right, Seattle Storm are continuing their stretch of alternating good and bad weeks relative to the timing of this podcast. We were very high on them a week ago, and then hours after, or I guess the day after we recorded, but not long after, they lost to a Connecticut Sun team that entered that game with two wins in a game played at 8 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesday in Connecticut. Then after winning a home rematch with the Sun on Friday, they lost a fourth quarter lead to the Washington Mystics, who are .500 but have been outscored on the season, and then got blown out at the LA Sparks on Tuesday night in their last game before the All-Star break. So one they probably should have won, and has left the Storm, kind of fighting for the fourth spot in the WNBA standings when, had they taken care of business this week with three wins against some lesser competition, they could be right there with the New York Liberty for third. Instead, they're holding off Atlanta for fourth. Sort of did make a move in the wake of the loss Wednesday when they signed former Connecticut guard Tiffany Mitchell on Thursday. They also kept both Mitchell and Mackenzie Holmes, as well as Ziya Cook, through Sunday's deadline for contracts to guarantee at the season's midpoint, which means barring a trade or a hardship eligibility for the Storm, this is the roster the rest of the season. They have, I believe, $223 in cap space. A hilarious amount. Mitchell has immediately become the first guard off the bench, perhaps Noel Quinn's most trusted reserve. She finished Sunday's game in place of Erica Wheeler after scoring 12 points on 5 of 7 shooting with a pair of steals in 23 minutes. But the 2 of 2 three-point shooting game in that game isn't really Mitchell's track record. She's a career 28% three-point shooter who was waived by the struggling Aces not long ago, which is why she was available for the Storm to pick up mid-season.
So what's happening in these games? I guess before then, not just to brush by this, right? It's not just information. They've not looked good
They have not.
in the last week.
It is
And
accurate.
what is happening?
I mean, it's not the same thing every time, but Dominique Malunga has not been able to maintain the trust of Noel Quinn or the kind of performance that we saw at New York. It's sort of what we've seen this season where there are these terrific performances that kind
You
of
said they
push
got
weights.
crushed by the Sparks?
Washington got crushed by the Sparks. That was my
Got
point.
it. I was like, I'm not seeing this game anywhere.
No,
So they
that's
lost to Washington, and then Washington got crushed by the Sparks right after that.
that was the context, yes.
Okay.
And Alicia Clark has not played particularly well off the bench the last few games, so it's really been Tiffany Mitchell is the only reserve who's been particularly productive since she signed. But it's kind of different issues each time against at Connecticut. They didn't get enough stops, had a big lead early, let Connecticut back into it, took the lead again, but then, were outplayed badly in the second half of that one, the fourth quarter in particular. Washington, they lost a lead in the fourth quarter. So, Washington certainly, I think, lent more credence, a game where they struggled to score and did get a lot of stops, lent more credence to your theory that this team is wearing down late in games due to their lack of depth.
I mean, they've been, what if, if you could look at their scoring from the season, quarter by quarter, is the fourth quarter much worse? Or is it just those couple of games against Connecticut and Washington that have been very bad?
Give me a minute to check that out.
If you're able to find that information quickly, I guess I just, it needs to start happening. And this is the part of the season that you have to start playing young players. And I am pretty skeptical about what the long-term goals are for this team. If they're just trying to hang on and win a couple of these games, first off, it's not working. And your argument about young players need to earn those minutes, it's kind of like they need them in the rotation more than they need to go win these games, because either way, it's not working out for the team. It's not working playing the older players a ton of minutes. And I mean, they haven't tried the opposite, but like, if they're feeling like they're desperate to go win some of these games and needing to play them, that's not working in the situation. So something has to be done.
Over the course of the season, the fourth quarter has been their second best quarter at 0.4
Really?
plus 0.4 points per game, and their best quarter has been the third at plus 2.1. It's really been poor starts, generally speaking, that have plagued them. They've been outscored in the first quarter.
It's just been recently, though. So, I mean, this
Correct.
could be, I suppose, a little bit of a cumulative effect. Maybe the All-Star break will be helpful for them, but let me ask you a question. I don't know how fire happy the WNBA is relative to the NBA or other sports.
Well, they have a team named the Fire, so they're pretty fire heavy at the moment. Let the record reflect that Tristan is giving me a look of displeasure. Storm also tied for the most clutch wins in the WNBA at 9-6, although the net rating in those situations is slightly negative.
If Noel Quinn was coaching an NBA team in the same way, would Noel Quinn keep her job for the entire season?
Yes.
You think so?
Yeah, I mean, they're still around or ahead of expectations. Like we did mid-season grades at ESPN, and they got, I think, a B minus. So
That must have been hard for you.
that it wasn't a B plus.
Yeah. You're like, just win these two games, we could give you a B plus. Do it for the B plus team.
That's even a better rallying cry than doing it for the roundup.
Okay. I mean, I think that's fair and we'll see, but I just the rotations, this last week has been pretty rough. I mean, they've had good wins on the season. They probably had better wins in the season than they had all of last year, right? So maybe there's progress overall, but it's just been a little bit hard to see lately. And I just question what is this team looking for right now? Like, what is the goal for this season? I get it. You want to make the playoffs, I suppose,
I think
but
it's to win a playoff series, which is still completely plausible.
what do you do long term? If you're Noel Quinn, you're just hoping that.
What do you do long term? You hope the Los Angeles Sparks miss the playoffs and win the lottery.
And you just go get more talent next year. Malunga is the future, though, right now.
Without question. She's also 19 or
But
20. I don't know if she's turned 20.
3 minutes.
I would love to see more minutes for Dominique Malanga.
3 minutes, 2 rebounds, 1 shot. I get it. There may be, I mean, Neko was a negative 16 on Sunday and didn't really play very much either. But some of these minutes from starters just don't make sense. They have to find a little bit more of a rotation here.
I agree.
Malunga or not, they just have to have a little bit more of a rotation.
Well,
It makes sense to me for who it is, but right now I just feel like the team has been a little bit mishandled at this point in the season. Curious to see how things look coming out of the All-Star break. And maybe things will turn around. Like you said, we've been kind of going back and forth, positive and negative, but
they'll only have the one chance to turn things around, I think, in the next week. I'm not totally sure when we'll record relative to them coming out of the All-Star break, but they close out the first half with a Kids Day matinee Wednesday at Climate Pledge against Golden State, looking for their first ever win over the expansion Valkyries after losing both matchups at the Chase Center. Those are looking less surprising in the context of Golden State hanging around 500 with a positive point differential, though the lopsided nature of the second game in particular was still disappointing.
Malunga led the team in rebounds in that win against the Sun. How many minutes did she play in that game?
12? Oh, you don't actually have it
10
pulled.
minutes. 10 minutes. And out-rebounded Gabby Williams, who played 38. Ezzie, who played 30. Neka, who played 34 minutes. I mean, come on. That has to be a value to the team, right?
Given how poor they are rebounding, I would say yes. Although I don't know for sure if they're better rebounding with her on versus off.
I'd be fascinated to see, like, to grab 8 rebounds in 10 minutes when some of these players are playing for so many more minutes. I don't know. We'll see. It's a long season, but right now things are just not feeling great in Storm World.
No, but again, last week they were feeling great. We saw a scene with the Mariners, the opposite switch got flipped, so it does happen. Wow, they were really bad at rebounding with Lee Yarou out there. Dom on court versus off court, it's basically the same in terms of defensive rebounding.
I mean, the minutes are, the sample size is tiny, but
I agree, but also grabbing rebounds individually isn't as strongly correlated with team rebound effect as we once thought it was. We're very long now, so you get like a minute if you want to complain about DeMond Williams Jr.'s
I don't
rating in
care.
NCAA 26. Okay.
He's gonna figure it out. He's going to, there's gonna be an update to the
Yeah.
rosters. DeMond is gonna be higher. Just wait till the season starts.
All right, Seahawks rookies were scheduled to report to training camp on Tuesday. Second rounders Nick Emmanuori and Elijah Arroyo remain unsigned and did not report. As a refresher, guaranteed salary is negotiable in contracts for rookies drafted after the first round, and a new precedent was set this year with the two players taken ahead of Emmanuori in round two, getting full and guaranteed deals. Those are as yet the only second round picks to sign.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, every second round pick is like the agents are trying to make second round picks guaranteed.
Exactly. And good for them. And then also kind of no one wants to be the first that goes out there and signs a contract that isn't guaranteed or isn't fully guaranteed, I should say.
Arroyo is probably not going to be.
No, I think that'd
Emmanuori,
be.
I could see. It's the future, John. Just do it. What are you going to do? What's the difference? Like, how many years is it? 4 years?
Right. Well, the
what
difference...
are the chances that Nick Emenwori is not on this roster in 4 years?
Well, Dee Eskridge would be the example of the second round pick who was not on the roster in his fourth year.
How many years did Dee Eskridge?
He played three. And he was guaranteed two per Bob Condotta of the Seattle Times. So it definitely happens, but also Eskridge was taken much lower in the second round. First
just
round
fucking
picks
do it,
have
John.
4 years
Get him
guaranteed.
in. Get him into training camp. We don't want to lose a seat. Yeah, the 56th pick. Like Emenwori. And it was a bad draft pick, right? Dee Eskridge. I don't know if it was a good draft pick at the time to take Eskridge. We were kind of excited about him, but like it didn't turn out well. Emenwori is near the top of the second round. He was first round talent. Just guarantee the deal, John. Get him in.
I would do it. Two Seahawks have ranked in the top 10 in positional rankings from my ESPN colleague Jeremy Fowler thus far. Leonard Williams was sixth among defensive tackles. Julian Love was 10th among safeties. Neither of those players were rated.
Who were those
in the
five
top 10
defensive
last
tackles
year.
That were ahead of Leonard Williams?
I mean, they're very good players.
I'm sure that they are, but like, man. It is a little bit like, what does the big cat have to do?
I mean, I think, you know. Let's see here. Number one was Dexter Lawrence the second. Number two was Chris Jones. Number three, Number three was Jalen Carter. Number four was Jeffrey Simmons of the Titans. And number five was Quinnen Williams.
They're all basically the same territory. It's
right.
It's fine. But
I mean, the notable thing, I guess he wasn't even honorable mention last year, Leonard Williams. He was only in receiving votes, so he certainly pushed up a lot. Number nine on this list, Vita Vea.
Hello.
Other players,
I will say, fourth ranked among defensive linemen by PFF.
Yeah, I mean, that's not that different than sixth. And also, there is, like, if you're doing a predictive, you want to include kind of multiple years of data. Ken Walker the third at running back, Charles Cross at tackle, Ernest Jones the fourth at linebacker have been listed as receiving votes thus far. Still to come, wide receiver and cornerback, a couple of spots the Seahawks could figure into at the very least in the honorable mention.
JSN's a top 10 receiver, and I think Spoon's in the top 10 of cornerbacks. It'll be close.
It'll be more players certainly in the top 10 for the Seahawks than last year.
I'm shocked Ken Walker received votes.
I'm also surprised by
like
that.
Votes for I
I'm
put
not sure
Charbonnet
that,
ahead of it.
Yes, that's I'm not sure that Ken Walker III will be starting for the Seahawks. So that's it. It's list season. Training camp will start in earnest next week, and we'll presumably have more to talk about then.
Good God. It's a little crazy that we've gotten here. Because it feels like, I don't know. Doesn't feel like we're here yet.
It
but
does not.
Football is almost upon us. Obviously, college football's starting.
It is kind of amazing that this was once the Peltoncast bye week, and now between expansion, the storm, and then paying attention to the Mariners and having the Mariners be relevant in the All-Star game, it's like one of our big weeks of the year.
This is a Mariners podcast.
I've been saying it.
On that note,
thanks for listening.
Where were you eating dinner?
Best Friend.
Oh, you're staying in, what's it called?
I am staying in Parque MGM. Am I putting my safety at risk by putting that out there?
No. Well, did you stay there? Like, you're leaving tomorrow.
Correct.
So I think you're fine. But did you stay there specifically because of eating at Best Friend?
No, but it's a nice side bonus.
It didn't hurt.
Yes.
What is Summer League like? I feel like I've seen, like, because the Mavericks shut down Cooper Flag. Maybe this is just me, but I feel like the hype around NBA draft picks is like real mild right now.
I mean, Thursday night was sold out. I don't agree with this assessment. I think teams are playing their draft picks somewhat less than they have in past years. Like, now it has become kind of obligatory. If you continue playing after the first two games as a lottery pick, but as a top 10 pick, then people start to wonder what's wrong with you. So
they might be killing Summer League. I don't know. Also, where was the
People think that Summer League was more than it was. Like people in their minds, the Zion Williamson game or the Victor's games are all of Summer League. And like, no, Summer League after the first Sunday has never been a thing. Like, that's always the case. It's just the first weekend that people think of when they think of Summer League in their head.
Is like the atmosphere and the culture the same?
Pretty much. I don't know.
Okay. All right. Summer League's fine.
I mean, I haven't been to any of the Yeonhansen games. Those are apparently quite notable.
Are we feeling good about him, by the way?
So far, so good.
I feel like the Blazers might have done it again. But that's not the other question I wanted to ask.
When did they do it the first time? You're saying Kamara and
I feel like
Avdija?
the
Okay.
Blazers have been really good at finding
Neither of
players like
them
that.
Portland draft picks.
But they've been like finding players like that for like 2 decades, basically.
I suppose. I don't know that I would consider the success of the Brandon Roy draft pick relevant to the 2025-26 Portland Trail Blazers.
It's not even that. It's more
I don't
like
know if
they
you're
just
aware,
kind of
Brandon
find
Roy
players in
Jr. is
strange
playing
places.
at UW.
Where was the Hoop Collective show, by the way?
It was at Brad Garrett's Comedy Club in
Oh,
MGM Grand.
interesting.
Yeah.
How was that? How was
You
that
know,
for
the
a live show?
it was outstanding.
Really?
Yeah.
God.
Now I'm gonna have to take this out.
Wait, really? Why?
The part where you said
Everybody loves Raymond slander.
you know that our grandparents are looking down from heaven and are not okay with
Jimmy
that.
Johns will never recover.
I actually think Jimmy Johns wins in this scenario. Brett Garrett is their rival.
Oh, wait. I thought Brad Garrett. Wait, who does he advertise for?
No, he's in Jimmy Johns ads.
Oh, he's the
Jimmy's
rival.
Johns, but he's the
He's
rival alone.
the rival in the ad.
Yes,
Okay, fair enough.
that's the joke. It's not as funny as you have to explain it, although
If
you are
you take
laughing.
anything out, leave in the Brad Garrett slander line.
I will.
Should we talk about an NBA Seattle like during the actual podcast?
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense. Is there any other food stuff that you want to talk about now? Because I feel like this is a good place for that stuff to live.
I agree. I mean, I've got my routine down now. I went to Momofuku for both lunch and dinner yesterday. It's
And
one
then did you
touch.
stop at the hospital in between
You
or?
know, I ate much lighter at the lunch, which was a good thing.
That's
Lotus as
always
I
such a good
am.
joke. Something like that always kills
I'm
Brad
told
Garrett's Comedy Club.
oh, I'm told that there is a restaurant that like advertises how unhealthy they are for you here, but I've
That's
not
in
done the
Old
research.
Town. It's in,
Oh, is it? Okay.
yeah, it's called like we walked by there.
I don't know anything about it. I just heard about it secondhand from someone.
Heart
And I
Attack
was.
Restaurant. I think it is literally called Heart Attack Grill.
Okay. Well,
Is that that's the one you're talking at?
I have a number of issues with
405
that.
Fremont Street in downtown Las Vegas.
So,
I've
yeah,
got
I
some
mean,
real questions about this restaurant looking at their website, I'm not gonna lie.
I have more questions about this website. I'm not even going to link it in the post notes because I don't want them to get the attention. You're going to
Wow.
have to search for it yourself.
It's a little judgmental, but okay. Okay, so you've got your
Since when has
routine
this
down.
podcast not been okay being a little judgmental? That an issue
We're
here?
so used to being, I feel like this is being raised both in Seattle and as UW fans, of just being a little condescending. Or no,
Oh.
maybe because we're not quite at the echelon of like Ivy League condescending, but it's condescending to all of our peers.
There's levels to this shit, as they would say.
We Luka's baseball tournament over the weekend, they lost in the co in the championship game. They were a 12U team playing in a 13U tournament. They made it to the championship game. And the other team tried really hard to win in that championship game. They had 56 rostered players. But
Is that serious?
yes, that means that's how many players have played for this one team basically throughout the year, because they
I
just
see.
keep bringing in like
Ringers.
pretty much, yeah, Cap Anson. But after the game, because the program that he's at is very much the UW of programs. Like the whenever they lose, they always lose the right way.
Oh, you love to see it.
The coach of the team was like, "Well, they have their way to play the game, and we have our way to play the game, and that's what happened." He was just like, "You're forgiven for losing," or whatever. Like those people have a certain way to play the game. Anyway.
We have learned through the Hoop Collective podcast that Brian Windhorst's wife, who is at the pod, and this got brought up, brought in ringers for a basketball tournament for their son.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
I don't know how people do things in Nebraska, but it's not exactly how we do things over here.
Not a Lucas team in Omaha.
Pretty questionable place, if you ask me. But okay, so Momofuku, what else is part of the
A Lotus of Siam. Those are the big three for me.
Lotus of Siam, Best Friend, and Momofuku? That's like where you're hitting every time.
So I got it down.
And none of them disappointed. What did you do at Momofuku? Like, what is the actual like staple now?
Well, still the bosom, the pork shoulder.
Okay.
So we had that as well as, but my favorite of the large format meals is the crispy duck. I think that's quite outstanding. It's like served on a bed of fried rice, and you do the same thing sort of where you make little lettuce wraps with the duck and the rice.
That's at Lotus of Siam or that's at Momofuku?
That's a Momofuku.
Okay.
Lotus
I was.
Siam, the staples are the crispy prawns, including they fry the shells and you eat those and they're delicious.
Yeah, those are
And then
good.
the cow soy.
I just wasn't that impressed with Lotus of Siam.
And I was there for that meal. It wasn't as good as other Lotus of Siam. Like I started to second guess Lotus of Siam, and then I went back, I think a few weeks later when I was there at Summer League, and I was like, nope. It was just an off
We
night.
just didn't have a good meal.
Yeah. Bad vibes.
I wonder if the atmosphere is bad. You know, I really have to blame Ben.
Oh no. Oh, this is our Katie, the famous cousin Katie's husband Ben, happens to look and dress much like the writer and comedian Joe Mandy. And Joe Mandy
Not
was,
like much like, it's exactly the same.
I mean, I don't know that he necessarily dresses in normal life. This was more Joe Mandy's character on Parks and Recreation, I believe, specifically, that led to this joke. And Joe Mandy was on Saturday night hanging out with the No Dunks guys while I was hanging out with them, but it was like two separate groups. He was talking to Taco Trey Kirby, and I was with Jay Skeets and Toss Mellis. And our groups, like, they walked over at one point, but there was never like introductions or like a full integration of the group. And then he left, and I never got the chance to say hello or pass this information along to Joe Mandy, to my deep, deep regret.
I'm looking at the photos and I don't think they look that similar right now, but I think it was maybe the dress that made them look more similar. Also, I've
Exactly.
represented all of these people you talked about. I
You
was the
represented Joe
agent.
Mandy at
No, not Sean Mandy.
oh
Just Trey Kirby and Jay
yeah,
Skeets.
of course.
I was the agent for all of these people. And
They
all of them
remember.
were like, thank God we're at Brad Garrett's Comedy Club now. Away from the tyranny. Was it ticketed?
Was ticketed, yes.
I bet ESPN just paid them to go in there. I bet it was a rental. It's not the kind of thing that I would do.
I understand that ESPN was probably, I mean, the people that put this on were probably operating at a different scale. You also didn't put together the degree of merch, the tumblers, the hats, the stickers.
They had that
That's,
again?
oh yeah, every show.
Oh my
So
God.
sadly, as we may have discussed on the podcast, I can't make the Mina Kimes live pod at the end of the month, or at, yeah, the end of the month. So I'm gonna miss
Oh,
out
where
on
are
that.
you?
I'm going to a concert that night.
Have we talked
So.
about which one?
Death Cab for Cutie.
They're playing again?
They are playing again.
Where?
Climate Pledge Arena sold
Wait,
out.
really?
Yeah.
Just playing a show?
Seattle loves that. It's a 20th anniversary of plans this time.
They really are just like
Milking the 20th
anniversaries.
anniversary.
Yeah, that's.
It's a thing.
I'm
They're
a.
playing like small venues in Brooklyn, as far as I can tell on this tour, and then Climate Pledge Arena.
What are the small venues? I have to look this up. Small
I
venues in
don't know what the
Brooklyn?
scale is, but they're not Barclays Center. So I'm pretty sure they're smaller than Climate Pledge.
Well, I'm just gonna
I
look and
mean,
assure you that these are not small venues that
granted,
they're
they could
playing.
be like Paramount size. I think that's plausible. But
They might
again,
be playing the Brooklyn Paramount.
Paramount is not as large
They
as.
literally are playing two nights at the Brooklyn Paramount Theater. It's like 10,000 tickets.
Okay, that's not
Cool off.
18,000.
Small venues.
Okay, fine. They're not small venues.
Yeah, they're playing Union Pool.
They're playing something
One person out
called
there is going to understand what I'm talking about.
MetLife Stadium. So, Podcasting.
You really want to go see Death Cab again? I mean, that's cool. It's
I
cool.
do.
They are playing MetLife Stadium.
Wait, are they?
Mm-hmm.
No joke?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
They're not
Well,
headlining MetLife. That would be
okay.
really something.
I just made that up. Who's headlining?
They are supporting My Chemical Romance.
Okay.
Yeah, people would really want to follow them into the dark if they were headlining MetLife Stadium.
There's something in the Thomas and Mack Center celebrating the 40th anniversary of it that hangs in one of the restrooms on the concourse. And it one of the events it touts is in 2001 that U2 played a concert there that was apparently emotional not long after 9/11. But they also note there that
Johnny Drama was very emotional about it.
the opening act was an up and coming ska band from the LA area called No Doubt. And this is in 2001. No Doubt was not up and
Actually
coming
said up
in
and
2000.
coming
It
in the.
legit said that.
What?
I don't know what to tell
They
you.
had already been at that point the biggest band in the world.
I'm only relaying the information.
I think it's. Is that a joke?
No.
Or are they trying to trick people? Look, if it's 50 years from now, people wouldn't know the timing of
Exactly.
it. It is too recent for them to have us think that in 2001, No Doubt's entire career had basically happened by 2001.
Right, apparently this was the Elevation tour, I'm told.
Was a little known
Yeah,
upstart called
support
No
act, no
Doubt.
doubt. It is
They'd
accurate
only
to say.
sold 25 million records at that point.
Well, we can't all be little known like the headliners at Brad Garrett's Comedy Club.
Right, thanks for listening.
Opening act, Alex Rodriguez and Mark Laurie.
What?
Then Nick Nurse. Wait, you don't know this. Do you not know this?
Alex Rodriguez went to
He was a guest on the live show.
of the Hoop Collective?
Yes.
Do you think his like agent or manager or whatever was like, this is a big deal, A-Rod. I'm telling you, this is an important platform to get on. You've got to impress these guys.
Think he knows Brian Windhorst and probably communicated with him accordingly.
They were like, they've got KP. I don't know who else is on there.
Second guest was Nick Nurse, NBA champion head coach. Third guest, me.
Wow. Hello.
Oh,
That's incredible. Yeah, for the record, Tragic Kingdom, which came out 6 years before that performance, they sold 16 million copies.
no one is disputing that No Doubt was had come. They were not
It
up
would
and coming.
probably
They
be
had come.
like in order of U2 records and No Doubt records, it'd probably be the third highest selling, is my guess.
Sounds about right. We should all be so up and coming.
What did you talk about on there?
Summer
Was
would.
it interesting?
I talked about how to correctly pronounce Young Hun Sen's name.
Yong Han Sen. All right. That's the thing. Did they have you do
People.
anything fun at all?
I mean, there were fun moments within it.
Okay.
People can listen to or watch the podcast. They don't need to take our word for it. It's
Okay,
out
I'm
there.
sure they have. You've really been everywhere. It's like a media blitz for ESPN senior writer Kevin Pelton. You're on 30 for 30s or whatever.
Yes, I did promo
E60s.
that. Just 30 for 30s.
You're on a 30, like that's crazy, right?
You saw that the video of me asking a question to Adam Silver got clipped, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that like I maybe that's more like local news than it is national
I
news,
think it
but
is local, yes.
still.
Good for me.
Good for me. You're finally little known up and coming writer, ESPN
Bingo.
senior writer Kevin Belton. That question was asked by a
On
little known writer.
that note,
Thanks for listening.
thanks.